Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. Sandy Fowler here with my co-host and partner in crime, Judy Davis, and we are obviously making another podcast for you guys. We so much appreciate the feedback that we have been getting recently, particularly from listeners in who are also in our Facebook Mighty Parenting group. It makes us feel good. It helps us to know what you guys are hearing and experiencing with the podcast. It encourages us, and we appreciate that kind of support, as well as when you share the podcast with others and when you support us by belonging to our private podcast group, which is at mightyparenting.com/support. You can find out more about that and find out how you can get extra content and extra access to us over there. Today, we are talking about success. So this is something that in one way or another, to one degree or another, we all want for our kids. What that looks like might be different, but we all want some kind of success. We want our kids to be, as we say here, happy, successful, and emotionally healthy. And yet, we hear stories of kids who struggle to launch. We hear about young adults who are having trouble handling the workplace when they finally get there. We hear about teens who are just exhausted and stressed out trying to do everything, and they're worried that they're going to miss out on success, so they're just trying to do everything under the sun. And when this happens, it's really hard for parents to take. You know, we want to do everything we can to give our kids a leg up, to make sure that they're living the best life that they can.
Exactly, Sandy. You know, and I think every single parent out there has this dream for their child. They dream that they want them to be successful. And that's defined in a lot of different ways. And it's really important to me as a parent, and I know a lot of our listeners feel that way, that our kids be successful in a way that not only makes them feel good, but it makes us feel good. I liken it to, I want my kid to be successful, not drug dealer successful, but I want them to be, you know, successful in their own right, in taking their gifts and taking their life into and taking responsibility for their life. And we want to do everything to give them that step up, the information and the tools they need to help them be successful. And for someone like me, I want the formula. I want that A plus B equals C. So that is why I am thrilled to be interviewing our two guests today. It actually would take an entire show to do justice to their bios. With us is going to be Ron Ferguson. He has a PhD and is the director of Harvard's Achievement Gap Initiative. He was also named a foremost expert on the U.S. educational achievement gap by the New York Times, and recently discovered the formula for what it takes to be a master parent and raise highly successful children. He co-authored the forthcoming book, The Formula, Unlocking the Secrets to Raising Highly Successful Kids. And he did that with our second guest, who is an award-winning investigative journalist herself, Tatcha Robertson. And Tatcha has more than 20 years experience handling investigative feature and news stories, both in digital and print media. She is the first female New York City bureau chief for the Boston Globe and has covered the 9/11 terrorist attacks and so many other major news events. And she is award-winning for what she does. So we are so excited to have you both here with us today.
Glad to be here.
Let me also make sure that it wasn't he did that, it was they did that. This book was actually Tatcha's idea.
Brilliant.
And I joined on, and we together discovered the formula. So this is really an equal partnership, not just something the guy at Harvard did.
Great. Thanks so much.
Just want to be clear about that.
And we, We appreciate that you've both taken time out of your schedules to join us today to talk about this, because as Judy said, so often as parents, you know, it seems so reassuring to get a formula and to have someone go, oh, we've got one. But before we dig into how to raise successful kids, I'd like to first just ask you a little bit about what it is that we're getting. Like, what do you guys mean when you say successful? How do you define that?
Yeah. What we mean by success, the bottom line is someone who's fully realized, who's done all they can with their basic human potential. We're not talking about any preconception of making a lot of money or being famous. We're talking about really making the most of yourself and your own potentialities. We have a little equation in the book that is smarts plus purpose plus agency equals fully realized. So a child has nurtured their own intellectual capabilities. They found some things they care about, particularly a central direction of purpose, and they've got to get up and go and the gumption to actually follow through and do it. And if you got those three things, you're likely to become what we call fully realized.
I want to emphasize, we do mean academically. In this book, we are talking academically smart, but not, like Ron just said, not just academically smart. We're talking about smart people with a purpose, and like Ron said, has that real sense of agency. But most of all, we're talking about people who are the best selves. I mean, the people in the book are really talented, but hardworking and successful young people. I mean, they all are high achievers.
We identify these people. A bunch of them are Harvard graduates and people that I had identified through an earlier project. But a lot of them are folks that Tatcha ran into in the world who were really impressive, or that I saw that were impressive. So these are really impressive people in the book, but the formula is not restricted to these super impressive people. It's more general.
No.
Gotcha. In your idea of writing this book and addressing this problem, what was it that you saw out there happening that made you go, we need to address this issue?
For me, it really wasn't a problem, but in a way it was. For me, I was working at the Boston Globe, and I think my husband told me to watch 60 Minutes or something. And I they started talking about success and kids and also young Black kids who didn't want to admit they were smart, you know, it didn't make them feel cool or whatever. But I was fascinated by, I'm African American, Ron's African American. This book has nothing to do with just, it's not about African Americans or about poverty. It's just about, you know, high achieving people. But I was really fascinated by some middle class white parents who seemed to, and this was just me, some of them seemed to know what to do. And I was just fascinated by that. Like, how is it? And can that be taught? And I actually interviewed Ron about it. I actually did a story for the Boston Globe, interviewed Ron for the first time about just that. Can you teach a parent to be strategic? And so that, it was like, the problem for me was, why is it that some parents know what to do and others don't? And could it be, could they learn? Mm-hmm. And that's how it started for me.
Yeah. I love that. And it's one of the things that was the catalyst to start this podcast. What you're saying, Tatcha, I think is such an important issue for society as a whole. Right now, especially in this time period of our lives, parents don't know how to give their kids the skills they need to deal with every single challenge they're facing. It doesn't matter what socioeconomic background, what race, what religion, there's challenges that our kids are facing because of technology and lots of different points that are happening that we as parents don't have what we need. So I love this idea that, you know, you ask that question, can you teach a parent to be strategic? And the answer is resounding yes from your book to our podcast. We can make a difference and get ahead of a lot of these challenges. So I know, you know, we've been alluding to this formula. So what is it? What is the formula?
The formula has 8 roles in it, and we discovered these things by looking at patterns in the stories that we heard. I mean, we interviewed a lot of people, and a lot of those interviews Tatcha and I did together, talking to either the young person, typically a young adult, or their parents, and we tried to extract common themes and patterns that we heard across all these interviews. And after a lot of interviews, we started, the formula kind of walked out of the fog. It kind of emerged. It's almost as if you were interviewing the people who were the finalists for the bake-off at the county fair. They'd all made apple pies, and you interviewed all of them, and you found out they all had discovered the same recipe for apple pie.
Got it.
It was sort of like that. And these 8 roles just occurred over and over again. The first of the role is the early learning partner. They pretty much all told stories about ways they spent time with their child before their child started school. And often it was related to the parent's own interest, but one way or another, the child learned to enjoy problem solving. Typically, the child learned to read well enough that by the time they got to kindergarten, they were able to impress their teachers and experience what we call the early lead effect and realize, hey, the teacher's really excited, I can do this. And so that's the first, the early learning partner is the first role. And that's the main one that's really sequenced. That happens early. The others tend to all happen all the way through childhood and adolescence, but in a way that matches the child's age and stage. The second role is the flight engineer. The flight engineer stays tuned in to what's happening typically at school. And most of this is from a distance, but if something starts to go off track, the flight engineer quickly gets involved to help a school resolve an issue or to hold the teacher accountable if the teacher's being dysfunctional in some way. One way or another, in many ways actually, the flight engineer just helps to be sure that the world is serving their child well. The third role is the fixer. And the fixer makes sure that resources are available to keep the doors to opportunity open. I mean, we've got people in the book who are homeless or who were just living on the edge financially. But one way or another, they would find a way that their child could get into a particular activity that the parent and the child deemed really important to match that child's interests. The fourth role is the revealer. And the revealer exposes the child to the richness of life, lets the child know that the world is a lot bigger than our neighborhood. There are lots of things to see and do and grow up to be, and it's an open menu, it's yours. So that's the revealer. The philosopher helps the child to deal with life's big imponderables. And they take their child seriously from the very, very beginning. You know, little bitty kids can ask deep questions. And we have parents who take those questions seriously. And they see in their child the adult who will someday, you know, be out in the world, but who at the moment is a 3-year-old. And they're respecting that child as a thinker and helping the child to ultimately find purpose and an ethical compass. The sixth role is the model. The model is the parent who conducts himself in a way that the child views them worthy of emulation. And particular aspects of the way the parent carries themselves or the way they relate to one to other people or the way they persist and are relentless when they're pursuing their own goals. So the child says, you know, I want to be like that. And I should also say that sometimes the model is a grandparent or a great-grandparent or somebody in the family that people talk about. Mm-hmm. They are, and actually there are multiple models, but among the models of those other people. The seventh role is the negotiator. And the negotiator helps the child learn how to make their case, how to self-advocate, how to speak truth to power respectfully, how to carry themselves in a way that people will want to cooperate and collaborate with them. And then finally, the eighth role is the GPS navigational voice, which is the parent in the child's head when the child has left home and the parent is not there, but all those lessons from the earlier roles are still there. So all these roles are relevant most of the time, and Tasha and I think that they're relevant no matter whether your child is at the moment a really high achiever or not. They're really, each of these roles is preparing your child in certain dimensions of their own, you know, personality.
Well, and you mentioned that the first one, the early learning partner, was important in the early part of their life. And then you've got, you know, these other seven things. Are those things that would become interchangeable and sometimes we would use one, then the other, depending on our child's development? Or when do you know when to introduce each of these roles?
Well, it's not really like when to introduce them. It kind of happens. So, for example, we'll say early learning partner. People started envisioning, you know, the type of qualities they wanted their child to have before the child was born. And so, and they start working with them really, really early, you know, like the reading. And like Ron said, starting to teach the child to read and play Legos and all those types of things because of brain development and all that. But say flight engineer. Flight engineer is one of the time-specific ones. The flight engineer happens right after learning the learning partner because the kid enters school. And so that's the one that, you know, it happens at a specific time. The parent, for the first time, is no longer the only person in charge of the child. But he or she is still in command, you know, but from afar. So taking real, like I interviewed Obama, and he was talking to me about how, regardless, you know, when he was a senator or president, he was still on top of what was happening at school. But some of the other ones, like the negotiator, that can start pretty early. We in the book we talk about a young lady who she was in second grade, who learned how to negotiate. There was a really bad teacher. And so she was in second grade, and she went home and she said, "Mom, this teacher's really bad. I want to learn. All the teacher wants to do is cartwheels." So she said, "Mom, what should I do?" And Mom said, "No, don't ask me what you should do. No, she said, "Mom, what are you going to do?" And the mom says, "Not what I'm going to do. What are you going to do?" And so the mom talked to her. She gave her some advice. And the little girl at second grader marched into the principal's office, asked for an appointment, had an appointment with the principal, and told her her concerns. The principal was so impressed, took those concerns, and the teacher, you know, she was no longer a teacher. But what I'm saying is that it could have happened earlier, it could have happened later. It was just, there was a situation that happened, and the parents had already started teaching their daughter how to self-advocate. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Ron, you want to jump
part of what Tasha is saying is it situational? I mean, the flight engineer is on duty beginning when the kid starts school and stays on duty until the kid finishes school. It's as if the parent always has their antenna up and they kind of know which of these things to do at which time, depending upon what the situation is.
We call this type of parenting strategic parenting or intentional, because parents are very thoughtful and very strategic at certain times, you know, when things happen. But they're always, like Ron just said, they're always working on how to prepare their child for situations.
One of the things that I find interesting and I appreciate very much in here is, although you're giving us a formula and you're giving us these roles, as you explain them to us, these are still roles of a parent other than the early learning, but even in some degree there. It's the parent still taking a backseat, guiding the child, helping the child, being there with them. But not once did you say, do this for them, take this over, you know, lay out their path, smooth things out for them. What I heard was a lot of helping and guiding and living the way we would want our kids to live. You know, when you talked about modeling it, we talk about that a lot here at Mighty Parenting, modeling the way you want your child to be. Even when you said negotiator, you didn't talk about a parent going in and negotiating the best thing for their child. You said, help the kid learn to self-advocate, help them learn to do these different things.
Yeah, we talk about passion projects. And so part of what the parent has their antenna up from very early, the child might be 2 or 3 years old, what really tends to turn this kid on? What do they really seem interested in? I mean, some kids might really love storytelling and making up stuff and drawing pictures and making dolls to go with their stories, and they're really storytellers. Another really gets into playing with blocks and building things with blocks. Another just likes having long conversations with people. And so the question is, what really seems to grab your kids' attention and they get absorbed in it? And then the parents' job is to support those passion projects. And we have pretty much every one of our young people in the book, their parents kind of knew what they were interested in by middle elementary school. And the child took the lead, the parent followed the child's lead. So when the parent is trying to think about how to be a revealer, well, the priority for the revealer is to show the kid more of the kinds of things that you know the kid's already interested in, even as you try to expand their horizons by showing them other kinds of things.
And this is how it's different from the type of parent thing that you kind of talked about. You said that we are not talking about. So, and some parents will load the kid up with a whole bunch of things to do, just keep them so busy. These parents weren't like that. These kids were busy, but they, like Ron said, these parents really focused on what these kids were passionate about, the passion project. So there was one big thing that these kids were passionate about, and the parents would do whatever they could to facilitate. So there was one young man in the book. He's now he's a diplomat now. He's amazing. He loved lizards. He loved reptiles. And his brother loved roller coasters called coasters. They were totally different brothers. One was shy, one was not. But the parents would buy books or take the one who loved lizards, take him to a conference with professors, you know, because he was so into it. And who else would be so into lizards but, you know, professors who were into lizards. So he would go to these conferences and speak up about the different types of lizards he would in the desert. His parents would go to the desert and help him find lizards. Or the other young man who loved coasters, they would make sure every time they would go on a summer break that they would go to a city where there were roller coasters. So guess what? This young man, little boy who was loving roller coasters, also learned math, engineering, and he was just a little kid. He's now a top engineer. But his passion project taught him things and made him more advanced. The one who loved lizards, he didn't become a scientist. He became a diplomat. But guess what? When he needed to learn Spanish and did not know Spanish, he was able to learn Spanish, able to realize he could learn it even as an adult, because he had, as a little child, he had mastered something. He had mastered learning about lizards and learning about reptiles.
Not to interrupt, I just wanted to kind of play on that a little bit, because a lot of our listeners have teenagers or young adults, and if they didn't capitalize on a passion project when our kids were little, is it too late for them now to start implementing some of these things and kind of turning the tides? You know, if ignorance is bliss, right? And if you didn't know that these were the 8 roles that you needed to play, and you're listening today and you have teenagers or even, you know, 20-somethings, how do we get started in helping facilitate that mindset that you're talking about creating from the time they're little if we haven't started till now?
Well, tell people buy the book and read it and get a lot of examples.
Okay.
a lot of times parents aren't really tuned in to what their kids are interested in and thinking about. You know, oh, he's over playing, he's doing his thing with his friends. Well, you know, find a way to get invited into that conversation. Find a way to ask whether there's anything you can help with whatever your kid seems really interested in. I mean, you could shock your child by expressing some interest in offering the help and the thing that they've always thought you thought was stupid. But now you say, no, that's cool. You know what? Help me understand it. Find ways for me to help. So getting engaged, finding ways to be the revealer. Whatever the child is interested in, find ways to give them even more exposure to it. I'm going to facilitate the connections to people who are really experts in that or to events. When it comes to the negotiator, with a very different role here, start asking your child to justify and make the case, to self-advocate when they ask you for something. And just let them know that you want to make sure they develop that skill. And you're not trying to be mean, but they're going to need to be able to have that skill when they go out into the world.
And kids so like to, I think, like, they like to have permission to debate a parent, right?
Yeah. And true. The philosopher. Yeah. I mean, the philosopher is another one. There are things that kids are trying to figure out that they think they have to figure out by themselves. And the parent can help with it. And the parent can also find other people to have that. Parent might say, well, I know you don't think I know anything about this, but I know some people who do, and I could hook you up so you could have that conversation with them.
Yes. We wrote this book in a workshop in New York City. It's called The Right Workshop, and we wrote for 3 years in that workshop every single Saturday, and we would turn in something. Well, a lot of the people, it was a small group, around seven people, but a lot of the people in the group, they were parents. And at first, they didn't believe, you know, that there was a pattern. And some of them had teenagers. And so they started listening, and they were a different type of parent. You know, they believed that, you know, just let the kids do what they were doing. And a few of them had some issues with their teenage kids. Well, they followed it for several years, and they started using the formula on teenage kids. And they saw, right, Ron? I mean, they saw.
Yeah. I mean, the workshop is almost like a little parenting class.
Yeah, it was like a it was like a focus group, but mm-hmm. they started seeing all these changes. So, for instance, one lady, she was always telling me, you know, that, you know, she didn't really help her kid with homework, and she thought he didn't want it. You know, he didn't want any help. Well, then he started having problems, and she started working with him because of the work, you know, because of the formula. She got him. She started talking to, you know, I forgot, it might have been writing. Well, she introduced him to journalists. And he became very interested. And another one started becoming more intentional. And these were, like, you know, teenagers who were 13 and 14 years old. Someone in the book, his kid loved comics. His dad had no interest in comics. But his father started going to all the, you know, the comic shows and started driving him wherever he needed to go to go to these comic, you know, con type festivals. And father was talking about, you know, their interests. So this happened when the kid was like in ninth grade and in 10th grade. So I don't think it's ever too late.
It sounds to me like part of the message is also that as parents, we should not filter what our teens would follow. That, you know, you're talking about comic books and things. And I can see where a lot of parents might go, okay, I can understand encouraging my kid's interest in, you know, lizards, something scientific. I can understand encouraging my child's interest in certain areas, but it seems like what you're saying is it doesn't matter what their interest is, what their
passion is. Well, no.
It's all
actually
about the support.
Well, hold on, but comic books, the father realized, he was very smart. The father, who was not, you know, I think he was like a taxi driver, he realized that his son, he was learning all types of things. The kids loved music. They would read music magazines, and they would get into these deep conversations. So the father understood that you could learn in all kinds of ways. I thought that was the brilliant part. We call these parents master parents. They recognize that that kids are always learning, and it's not always just in a classroom.
Yeah, it's about intellectual engagement. I mean, whatever your child is intellectually engaged in that's causing them to have to think and produce and interact with other people, support it, because those skills are generalizable. I mean, the child's experience of having worked through a project and brought it to fruition, they've had that experience now, so they'll transfer that understanding. Hey, if I did it here, I could do it there. And as Tasha said, even with something that might seem silly to parents like comic books, there's a ton of intellectual content in comic books.
Very much so. Very high. So another thing, Ron, that you just said, the lizard. Let me tell you something. Some of the parents, David told us that many of the kids around his neighborhood said, oh my God, I'm not going to let any lizards in our house. Lizards, go get a dog. Well, guess what? Luckily, David's parents did not say that. David's parents knew that if he was playing with, if he was interested in lizards, he was learning science, you know? So these parents are really thinking really hard about, okay, that's what he likes. What is he going to learn from that? If that's a passion, he's going to learn something from it.
Yeah, let me add to that. Now, when David was about 16 or 17, he started talking to people about what a career working with lizards would entail. And they told him, you spend a lot of time by yourself on the desert looking for reptiles. And so at that point, David is a very gregarious person. He likes being around people. So at that point, he decided that could not be his career. And he changed direction on it. But he still had his personality, his stick-to-itiveness, his focus had been developed around his interest in lizards. The other thing his parents had done is they impressed upon him that he had a responsibility to do something with this intellect that he had and to serve other people. And so their family had this tradition of service, and that's part of what led Davis into the Foreign Service, that he felt like he had to give something back to the world.
Sounds like they did it in a way that was kind of in parallel to his interest. Yes. It wasn't what they wanted. It was
never,
this is why we're doing this, and giving them, you talk about that whole philosopher and revealer and exposing them to the richness of life and looking at them as individuals that can be contributing members from the time they're little. That seems to be the mindset that we need to work on and nurture as a parent.
All these parents knew the type of person they wanted their child to be. Mm-hmm. Some of them had preferences with regard to career, but I don't think any of them followed their parents' preference for career. All these parents knew, though, that they wanted their child to have a sense of purpose, to have a strong sense of agency, to be able to negotiate their way through the world. And it's those qualities that they nurtured.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, there is one person in the book you might think that the parent pushed them, but they did not. She's a musician, a violinist, brilliant. Her whole family, they were all musicians, and her mother started teaching her to be a violinist. They were teaching all the kids to be musicians at a very little age. But this young lady, Maggie, loved music. So if she decided she did not want to be a musician, the parents would have been fine with that. But none of these parents were pushy. And guess what? They didn't have to be, because, they started, with these passion projects and they started early on allowing the child to have an interest. And we even looked at Einstein and we looked at how his mother and father parented him. And it was the same exact formula.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they enticed him into science. They didn't force him into science.
Right. And I think that's the takeaway, to inspire, entice, to be strategic in how you nurture what your kids are doing. So as our listeners are out there, and I know they can go and read your book and get all of this great information, and I want to ask you each this separately and hear your take on it, but if you could tell us one thing to do today, and we promise that would be something that we would implement into our parenting, what would that be? So Ron, you want to go first?
I think it would be to ask your kid what they're most excited about these days, and then just listen. And ask follow-up questions that communicate your interest in how your kid has answered that question. And end the conversation without making any suggestions, but with having signaled to your child that you're interested in their thoughts and interest, and you're curious enough to ask questions, and then just drop it and leave it at that.
And Tatcha, what would you tell us to do?
I would say, remember this, it's all about figuring it out. Figuring it out was basically the underlying secret of the formula. So parents were very thoughtful. If there was a problem, if there were hurdles, they thought about it. There's one parent, and I'll make this very quick, she raised three brilliant daughters, probably two of them. One created 23andMe, one is the head of YouTube. And there's another one who's a genius scientist. The mom wanted to raise really smart girls, and she did. But she realized they weren't doing so great on the SAT. And so what did she do? She figured it out. She thought about it. She started giving these really smart girls, but she started giving them cards, flashcards. She said, okay, whenever you guys are in a car or you're on the bus or you're in class, just read these flashcards. Just read them or just study them or whatever. And she put them all over the house. And she figured out what they needed to do. And she helped them. And they did the hard work. And each of them, from almost failing or not doing very well on a PSAT, they aced the SAT, all three of them. One made a perfect score. The other did very well. But the I think the lesson is she didn't know, but she just thought about it and figured it out. And every single parent in this book, they didn't know. No one has the answers, but they thought, took some time, and figured out the problem and assisted their children and being the best self they could be.
Yeah, we've covered a lot today. So just a couple of quick points to bring us back around. And first of all, you've defined success as someone who's fully realized, who's done everything that they can with their own potential. And yes, in interviewing, unfathomable amount number of interviews, you guys found a formula. You found that there are these eight roles: the early learning mm-hmm. partner, the flight engineer, the fixer, the revealer, the philosopher, the model, the negotiator, and the GPS voice, GPS navigation voice. And as parents pull and utilize those different roles, we can encourage our kids to learn. We can look for their passions and help support them in their passion projects, utilizing these various roles along the way. And we have to remember that even as parents of teens and 20-somethings, it is not too late to start, that we just need to start by tuning in to what our kids are interested in, find ways to get them more exposed to what they're interested in, and follow these roles. Let them learn to self-advocate. And I loved your example of giving them permission to debate a parent, because yes, people love that, having carte blanche to do that. But that also that we shouldn't judge or determine what activities are okay, what interests are okay for them, that this is about intellectual engagement, and it's about walking through a project and bringing it to fruition. So Ron, you said the one thing you want us to do is to ask our kids what they're most excited about at this point in their life, and then ask follow-up questions that signal our interest in their answer, but stop and don't push them. I love that, Tatcha. Remember, it's all about figuring it out, that we need to be thoughtful parents as we do this. And so I want to thank you both for joining us. And we will have links, of course, on the podcast post on mightyparenting.com. We'll have a link to your book. But also, is there a website that you would like to go to?
Yes, please. We're going to have so much fun on this website. We've had, Ron just had an amazing interview. I've done some interviews. We're going to do some together, and we're going to start a podcast. But our website is called mastersoftheformula.com. Mastersoftheformula.com. We're going to have a newsletter. We're going to continue this conversation and interview just some amazing parents and amazing people and figure out how they got that way.
Well, thank you so much, you two, for being here with us today and sharing the upcoming book. And we just want to remind all of our listeners, you are a mighty parent, and the tools and information that we provide are here to support you. And this is Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler, along with our incredible guests, saying see you next week.